Welcome to Layers of Film, the show where mediocre people discuss masterful films the first Monday of each month. I am your host, Austin Killian, joined by my co-host, who's been so kind to do the show pro bono since the beginning, Big T. How are you doing?
Doing great. The weather's warming up.
Yeah.
Outside's getting nice. Started a new job.
Oh, yeah. You digging it? You feeling good about it still?
Yeah, I've only been there for a week, but it's great. I like what I do, and the weather's nice outside, so that's great.
did you already start like planting anything, or is now the time to start planting? I really don't know.
Now is the time to start planting. We have some seeds germinating and growing indoors right now, because it's still like a little bit too cold to put some things in the ground, but usually by like May 1st, you're good to grow.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to put some stuff in the ground this week because I am not patient.
Yeah, get to it. Why not? Take advantage. You know what I was wondering? And it would probably end up being more expensive than I think, or maybe not actually optimal. But I was just like, I wonder if there's plenty of junk cars that you could get for like free or $50 or whatever that no one's ever going to fix up. And you could just, you could just use those as greenhouses. Just gut them. And use it as a greenhouse, because would it work? I feel like it could work.
Well, I mean, you usually want to have a lot of windows for your greenhouse.
Yeah, but like it traps in a lot of heat.
I mean, could for sure, probably. I mean, anything can be a greenhouse if you try hard enough.
Yeah, okay. All right. Because like you could make one DIY, you know, but I don't know how expensive that gets. Maybe it's nearly not. Maybe that's like $100 to do it yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Our greenhouse was maybe like a few hundred. I want to say it was like 200. It's like 8x6.
Wow.
And it comes with all the pieces and stuff. So.
Wait, you have a greenhouse?
We do, yeah.
Well, then
it's not big, but.
Can't you plant it anytime, basically? I don't know how greenhouses
work. You can grow stuff in the greenhouse, but we put stuff in like garden beds too.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So we have stuff in the greenhouse that's small, like herbs and things, but.
Herbs. Oh, I see what you're saying. Herbs. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, that's cool. Well,
yeah.
Anytime I think of a greenhouse, I just think of Harvest Moon because that's like really the goal. You want to get a greenhouse as soon as possible so you can plant things all year round.
It's true. You want those greenhouses.
Yeah. It gets really tedious after a while, though. Kind of kills the game. But it's great. Anyway. I don't have real experience with greenhouses. Actually, no, I do. I used to do some flower stuff. Like, there was people back in our hometown that, like, would sell flowers, and there was always, like, this huge flower sale or something that they would do, so I would help out in the greenhouse every once in a while, which was fun.
I love greenhouses.
Yeah, it was actually nice. It was very nice. Plants all around, flowers everywhere. It smelled nice.
It's another way to help with depression. Just surround yourself with greenery.
Yeah, I should get more greenery.
Do it. House plants are great. Outdoor plants are great.
Yes, they are. I agree. Man, I did like me and my ex, we took the kids and we went to like Zion National Park or whatever and did a hike. I had to work like the first day, but I don't like hiking, but whatever. The view was cool. When we went to the top of whatever it was, I really didn't look up anything. I just kind of like with my ex, I was just like, you just take care of it all. Cause I don't technically really want to do any of this, but I'll be there and it would be a good thing for us to do as a family. So let's do that, I suppose. And, it was good, but got back. And even though it wasn't like necessarily the type of we did a hot spring too, like on the way back somewhere, some hot spring, and that was cool too. But I was just like, man, I got back, I really want a house with a yard and a pool, like I want that now. And I'm like in this weird mode where I just like, how do I do some kind of? I was like asking ChatGPT, like, what do I do to get money now so that I can get a house with a pool.
Grow some herbs.
Grow some herbs, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Could do that. But, man, I don't know. We'll see. Someday. Someday, working towards it. All I have is a townhouse, and the money that we would make from selling that, I don't think is going to be enough to get a house with a pool. But someday.
Pools are a lot to maintain, too.
I know. I'd have to be
filthy. You need to get a neighbor who has a pool.
No, I want my own pool, dude, and a hot tub. I want both. Yeah. I love hot tubs. Oh, man, I love hot tubs. They're my favorite. But
human soup?
Yeah, it's delicious. You ever drink hot tub water? Oh, man, so good. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. That's gross, dude. Okay, I want to talk about three different things.
Go.
Okay. Helldivers 2 is a video game that came out. Everyone's talking about it. It's popular, whatever, so this isn't unique. But I just feel like it would be funny because you're, like, so anti, like, military, like, whatever, all that stuff. And the game is all about, like, it's like a play on, like, military propaganda and stuff. Like, you know, like, it's satire, right? Like, satirical or whatever. The whole thing is them just making fun of it. And there's, like, two enemies that they've introduced. There's, like, these bugs, and then there's these automatons, which are, like, robots. And the bugs, like, as far as I could tell, we're, like, on their home planet and messing their stuff up.
So we're colonizers.
And so we're, like, messing up their whole... And so they're just trying to take back their planet. But, like, the propaganda that, like, they're feeding you is just, like, they're ruining our way of life and, like, all this stuff. Dude, it's so funny. Like, they know exactly what they're doing with it. And then the automatons, apparently... We're not supposed to know, but there's, like, context clues and stuff, I think, and... like, we created the automatons, but people on Super Earth, I guess is what it's called, aren't supposed to know that. And so, like, we created them, and they realize that we are the bad guys, and so they're fighting against us. And then there's, like, some, like, weird, what's the word? Like, I don't know, just, like, written things, like, Easter egg type of stuff that you find that are, like... If anyone ever tells you otherwise, like, turn them in because they're lying or something like that. Like, it's stuff like that all over the game. It's so funny. But it's just funny. Fun. Like, it's just fun. You're just diving in, you're shooting stuff, and you're having a good time. And it's
what platforms?
It's everywhere. It's all over the place.
I'll have to check it out.
If you ever want to check it out. It's only, like, 40 bucks, but it's so funny. It's
only just, like, 40 bucks?
Yeah, dude. Well, games are like 70. Yeah. They're like 70 now. So this is
inflation.
Great bang for your buck. I'm having a great time just playing and shooting stuff and whatever. It's super hard though. I just recently got to level 4 missions and they're kicking my trash. Because you dive in and then when you die you have to dive in again with your little pod and all that stuff and you have to go pick up all your crap that you let Like, you have, like, certain weapons that you spawn with, but then there's others that you have to call in and so that you can, like, they're the bigger weapons and the drone things and whatever. And so you have to go pick those back up, or if the cooldown is done, then you can spawn in some more, but it takes a while. And anyway, but with these missions, I'm, like, diving in because I'm doing them by myself, kind of. I don't know. I don't want to, like, mess up other people's games because I kind of suck. So I'm just, like, trying to do these missions on my own. And so I'm diving in. But I'm, like, dying immediately. So I'm just, like, there's so many times where I'm just, like kind of losing my mind. And I'm just, like, just give me a chance. Like, just let me pick up my stuff. I can't do this. I don't think I've successfully finished a single mission at level 4. And I'm just dying.
That's like Nazi zombies.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
After level 3, I was like, I'm out. I level can't do 3? This.
Dude. Oh. Oh, man. That's one of those, like, the original Nazi zombies, when that first showed up in World at War. Oh, dude. If I could experience, like, that playing that game for the first time and not having, like, a lot of zombie game experience before, that would be great. That was such a good time. Okay, next. Succession. Have you heard of this show? I think I've talked about it. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen parts of it. I haven't watched the whole series.
Okay. I just started that. I'm only like 4 episodes in. It's so funny, dude. Like, it's funny, but it's great. Or like, it's dramatic too. I don't know. I'm having a really good time with that show. I was wondering, like, what you would think about it because it is about, like, you know,
rich people
and capitalism and whatever. But
yeah, I don't know why we didn't finish it, but I think there's just so much TV. But I've heard really good things about it, so I probably should get back into it.
I'm sure there's going to be, because like a lot of the characters kind of suck or whatever, you know, they're just like rich douchebag type of, well, at least one of the characters. I really only wanted to watch it because of Kieran Culkin. And I've just, I haven't seen him in a lot except for like Scott Pilgrim, but I love him and Scott Pilgrim. And whenever I see interviews with him or something that crop up, I'm just like, man, I want to see everything that this guy's in. And I haven't even, there is too much to watch. But I was just like, you know what? It's time to watch Succession. His character is not good.
They're all irredeemable.
They're all a-holes, but he's like such, he's just a big a-hole. Like, and I'm guessing the series will go on and there'll be some kind of, you know, arcs where they're better and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so I'm excited to watch that, or more of that. And then this is a weird one. It's an album. So my friend from New Zealand, she put me onto this band, and only like a couple of songs. She really only knew like a couple of songs from them. But they're called Fur Patrol, and they're from New Zealand. And I just wanted to say that their album Pet, I'm like obsessed with right now. And it's like a 90s, or no, when did the album come out? Maybe 2000, 1999, something like that. I don't know. But it's like their first album.
Oldie.
Dude, it's awesome. I love it. It's kind of, it's like alternative rock. Sheryl Crow. It's weird, dude. I don't know. But like the combination is it's just perfect for me right now. Specifically their songs Andrew and Lydia. Those are the first ones that like those are the ones that she knew and those are the ones that I listened to. And I'm like, man, these are great. And I decided to like listen to the whole album. There's so many good songs on that album. Amazing. Anyway, so I just wanted to
check it out.
Put you on good. I'm trying to share that with a lot of people. They only have like 18,000 listeners on Spotify like every month, which is so criminal, man. Well, to be fair, they've only put out like two albums.
So one of them being 30 years ago.
and they're specifically from New Zealand. And so I don't know. Yeah. Like, that's like a smaller fan base, whatever. Anyway, just wanted to say that. That's all I wanted to say. Yeah.
Living your life over there.
Living my life of depression and entertainment.
They go hand in hand.
Yes, they do. Mm. All right, a little swig of Diet Mountain Dew. Get a burp a little bit later. Let's get into some housekeeping. Oh, what? You're good at saying.
Say gross.
Gross. I'm excited. Will I keep the burp in at the beginning? I don't know. We'll find out. I might not. It sounded pretty wet. It sounded pretty gross. So I might take that one out. You're so not impressed. Okay, housekeeping. Rate and review. Before we get into the discussion, let me just go through a list of things. If you could rate and review the show, it helps with discovery and gets the word out. If you haven't seen the film, be aware that we will be diving right into spoilers, sometimes right from the beginning of the discussion, so continue at your own risk. Make sure to listen to the end of the show, where we will reveal next month's film. Big T's turn this time, so it'll be great, I'm sure. He's been on a roll. And you can write into the podcast, layersoffilmpod@gmail.com, to be part of the discussion. Now, it is time for our first fun segment, if Big T has it ready.
Of course.
Called
Hollywood, you rather.
Oh.
In this segment, Austin is given three scenarios. Three situations with two scenarios each. One is from the movie we watched, one is from another movie or film, and Austin has to guess which film or movie the second one is from and which one he would rather do.
Yes.
That was probably the worst explanation I've given so far.
We said movie or film, which is like the same thing. Or
TV
show.
Yeah, whatever. I'm tired, okay? I have allergies.
Everyone's tired. Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Holly, would you rather have your birthday party ruined by a dad pushing your dad over or by birds savagely attacking your partygoers?
What? The second one.
Dude. You want birds to attack children?
No. Sorry. I'm trying to figure out what it's from or what it is. The birds attacking children at a party?
At a birthday party.
Oh, at a birthday party. Oh, man. I don't know what that's from.
The birds.
Oh, just the movie Birds or whatever?
Yeah.
I was going to say that, but I'm like, there's no way. And honestly, I don't remember. We watched it. I remember watching that movie, yeah, or at least part of it, in your basement. And the only thing that I remember from it is when the lady wakes up and is like, dude, that cracked me up for like a half hour, yeah, at least.
That's literally the only part that I remember as well. It's...
Okay. Yeah, let's probably go with the first one because it's pretty minimal. But
yeah, you should watch the birthday scene from The Birds because...
It's funny.
Well, there's this one part where there's like a little girl on the ground and she's kind of like, ah, and there's like a bird that looks like it's eating her.
Oh, no.
So you think she's dead, but yeah, she's doing her thing. She's alive. But she's, I mean, I love to see children suffer, so I'd go with the bird. No, I'm just kidding.
All right.
Yes. Definitely, yeah, the dad, even though it ruins your whole life, you know, down the road. But
dude. Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay. Hollywood, you rather have your child given up for adoption or have a mouse adopted over you?
Okay. Let's okay, so the other one's Stuart Little, probably. Right? It's gotta be.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
I can't imagine.
The other movie about a mouse who gets adopted by a family.
I don't know. Okay. Probably the second one. First one, dude, what? why would anyone well, I don't know. I guess maybe those two parents that are neither one of them in I Am Sam, neither one of them want their kid. So maybe they would choose that one.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah.
But just imagine the lifelong self-esteem problems you'd have if a mouse got adopted over you.
I feel like once I got to adulthood, I would be like, no, I get it. I get it.
Children suck.
I mean, number one, it's a talking mouse. So there's that.
True.
How could you compete with that? It's so cool. And yeah, and parents already love like getting tiny little clothes for their babies. Imagine getting the tiny little clothes for their mouse.
Their mouse baby. Child.
Yeah.
That just sounds like a villain origin story. That's what I want. Is a sequel to Stuart Little that's like a hardcore villain.
I got
movie.
An idea for a pitch tech. It's unrelated. I got an idea. Dude.
Okay. Holly, yeah, would you rather have your child's mother abandon the two of you, or have your best friends die in a tragic gasoline fight gone wrong?
I've never seen it. Zoolander, though, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah. I did see a clip of that, though. That is pretty funny.
It's such a dumb
scene.
It's
just a fun, like, 80s song playing. I can't... Which one is it?
I don't remember, yeah.
Wake me up before you... Oh, maybe it's not that one. I don't know. And dude, that's hilarious. I guess the first one I would say, because no one's dying in the first one. It's just really sad.
But your child is scarred for life.
I know, but I feel like death trumps... Well, they're stupid, though. You can't help stupid people. I don't know. Oh... I gotta say the first one. I feel like the first one is really sad, but it'll work out. I don't know.
No, it's true. It will.
Yeah.
As we've seen this movie. There you go. Hollywood, you rather.
Okay, so you choose the first one as well.
Yeah.
All right, so I believe we chose the same on all of them. I was wrong on one, or I didn't get one, right?
Correct.
Man, last time it was 3-3, or 3-2, what? I don't know. 6-6.
Yeah, it was 6-6.
Dang. So close this time. That's like once every season. No, once every 3 seasons occurrence.
Yeah, as unique as the eclipse.
Which I totally missed. Did you see it?
Of course.
Oh, man. You called me a nerd.
To get away, anything to get out of work.
Yeah, that's true. I think my daughter saw it, though, and she really cares about that kind of stuff, so that was good.
That's cool.
That's cool. They took a little break. And then the next one's not even going to happen until like 2070 or something like that.
2045 is when the next one comes to the continental U.S.
Oh, okay. Oh, but will there be others for other?
Yeah, I think eclipses happen like every 18 months. Oh, okay. So there's one that's happening in two years in Iceland.
Oh, okay.
That I kind of want to go to. It'd be cool.
That would be cool, actually. That's an experience right there. Neat. All right, well, let's get into the film. Of course, we're going to be talking about I Am Sam, released January, or worldwide, I think, released, whatever, January 25th, 2002. Synopsis is, an intellectually disabled man fights for custody of his 7-year-old daughter and in the process teaches his cold-hearted lawyer the value of love and family. Is intellectually disabled the correct way to say this now? What's the best way to say it now? Because I always said like mentally challenged or whatever, but maybe
definitely not mentally challenged.
Okay, well that's the way it was for quite a while.
Yeah, I think intellectually disabled now, or you would just specify what it is, you know, like who has autism spectrum disorder or whatever.
That's always the better option.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Directed by Jesse Nelson, written by Christine Johnson, and was this based off of a book? Is Christine Johnson like the author or something?
I don't think it's based off of a book, but it's inspired by a true story.
Oh, nice. And Jesse Nelson, composed by John Powell, cinematography by Elliot Davis. I recognize that name. Edited by Richard Chu. I'll cut that one out as you're drinking your water. Dude, you want to spit it out so bad.
It's horrible.
At least you don't have to smell it. Edited by Richard. Oh, yeah. Big actors Sean Penn, Dakota Fanning, Diane Weist. I still haven't bothered. What was the other movie that we watched where we didn't know how to pronounce her name? I can't remember. I should have looked it up. Budget of $22 million. Box office earnings, $97.8 million. And as far as I could tell, you could only rent or buy it. I don't know if that was the case for you, Big T. Yeah. Maybe that'll change down the line. I have no idea. But it was only $5 on Apple or whatever. So whatever. It was pretty cheap. Big T. What'd you think of the film, my guy?
So I had seen this movie before, so...
Yeah.
Well, I was about to say it didn't, like, nothing really surprised me, but for some reason, I thought that Laura Dern played a love interest.
What the? When's the last time you watched the film?
Clearly a while ago.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because I was like... Laura Dern is making a really late appearance in this movie for...
Love interest to who?
Her to be to Sam.
Really?
I don't know why I thought that was the case.
Holy smokes. All right.
But, no, I mean, I think that there's, like, a larger discussion to be had about non-disabled actors playing actors with disabilities.
Oh, interesting.
But okay. I think that the movie... Here's... I really love the cinematography to this. I thought that the camera work was really, really impressive and does a good job of capturing like the mood that they want to go for. Mm-hmm. I also think it's just like a sweet story. It's a little bit tropey, you know, but also sure. when did this come out? Early 2000s?
2002. Yeah, early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah. So I, you know, it's kind of like I said, yeah, it's kind of tropey, but it's sort of... kind of hits all the check marks for a movie in that era, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was a movie. I would say it was like pretty solidly average for me.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. I think there's like the execution could have been better in a lot of different ways. Maybe if it was made today, I would have a different outlook. But yeah, it is. I mean, the cinematography for me wasn't super standout-ish, but...
I don't know if cinematography is the right word, but the camera work. Like, I really like that a lot of times you get from Hit Sam's perspective. And then the camera is, like, shaky and moves around and gets kind of, like, erratic at times. And that's very reflective of sort of Sam's internal world. So that's kind of what I guess I mean by that, is more the camera work.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Okay, so that brings up a thought that I had either this morning or last night. It's like the music, you know, I kind of dial into that. The music's like, it's not my favorite, but it's weird. I feel like I've said in a lot of different films that we've covered, like the music... is perfect for what it is, you know, for like it just fits for the movie and it like makes it But for some reason, I'm having a weird, like, kind of push and pull with my thoughts on the music in this, where it's just like, well, it really isn't my favorite. It is perfect. But for some reason, it's still being edged out by, like, I'm not, I don't know. What is the, it's like, there's like a recorder, I feel like. I don't know exactly what the instrument is, but it sounds like a recorder that's just kind of playing, like, sporadically sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when you're, like, watching stuff that, like, Sam is doing. That's usually, I feel like, when it really comes out. And I think that does kind of encapsulate probably, like, maybe the world that he's in his head, mm-hmm. I guess. But it's still not my favorite because it's just so sporadic. It doesn't...
Yeah.
It didn't seem as intentional as maybe some other things that perfectly fit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it does... I mean, maybe they just had a random person just like, you know, just whatever. Just do whatever. It doesn't matter. And maybe... You know, I don't know. Maybe if there's some knowledge on that, that would be interesting. But otherwise, like, I think in a lot of different aspects, it's that kind of is, like, the cinematography doesn't necessarily stand out to me or the camera work, but I think it does work for what's going on because it is pretty.
I think it captures the mood pretty well that it's going
for. Yeah. Like, it fits, but for some reason, all these different aspects are kind of getting edged out. I remember Dakota Fanning's performance being a lot, I mean, I was a kid, remember, but when I watched this last, and I only watched it once, but it is really impressive, like, the performance that she gave, but it's a little bit creepier than... Did it seem creepy? She's a little dead-eyed sometimes.
I don't know if creepy is the word, but it definitely is kind of cheesy. Like, it feels a little forced at times.
Yeah, sure. You could tell that there's some act, like, you know, she's not necessarily the character, but she's acting. But she's doing a good job acting. I just feel like if the soundtrack had creepy music in the background, you might get a different sense of this, where she's, like, manipulating. She's like, she's the evil mastermind.
Kill someone.
Yeah, dude. Like, I kind of,
she's gonna light something on fire with her mind.
Dude, exactly. Exactly. It kind of freaked me out a couple of times. I was just like, whoa. Like, I don't know. And maybe that's like the director, like, hey, can you, like, pull back on the creepy factor on this or something like that? Because she is doing a good job. Like, obviously her character is, like, she's trying to manipulate the situation to work for her, I feel like, a lot of times. And that's kind of the type of dialogue that she gets throughout a lot of the film.
Yeah, for sure.
And which makes sense, but yeah, there's a weird, like, evil, like, kind of feeling behind it, even though it's really not supposed to be. It's just a kid trying to get what she wants, you know?
Yeah.
It is still a really good performance, though, for sure. Man, Sean Penn's performance was pretty great, I would say. I think it holds up. Before I go, I would like to hear your thoughts on kind of the conversation of people who don't have that are intellectually disabled playing characters that are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been a big push, especially recently, that when having diverse characters in a movie, you should have people of those communities representing those actual people, you know? So, sure. Like, there was a movie recently that Sia produced that was about...
Sia, the musician?
Yeah, it was called, like, Melody or something song-related. Uh-huh. And the main character is, a young woman with autism, and she's played by an actress who doesn't have autism in real life. And there was a lot of discussion around that. Like, I mean, you see the same thing. I mean, it's particularly, it happens sometimes. It's a discussion that's had with, like, queer characters. Like, oh, should a straight person be able to play a gay person or a trans person or whatever? And the discussion is a little bit different around that than it is with people with disabilities, because, I mean, a very clear argument is, like, for people that have physical, visible disabilities, their roles that they can play in movies is very limited, right? Like,
Yeah, sure.
And so you're taking away some like acting jobs or roles that a person with or an actor with disabilities could play by giving it to an actor who doesn't have disabilities,
right,
or have a disability. So there's like a larger conversation that I think at play around that. Speaking just on like the technical components, I agree that Sean Penn's performance is really impressive. Like, it's just like really like thorough, I would say. But I just think that it's important to note like that, at least for me, I think that it's important that when you are telling stories about people with disabilities, the characters should be played by people that actually have those disabilities. Like, sort of like when The Quiet Place came out and there was a character who's actually deaf, you know, you don't have a non-deaf person playing that character. And same with Coda, like having deaf actors and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just important to know. And especially, you know, 20 plus years after the movie came out, you can't really expect them to have been aware of it back then. But
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I disagree with that at all. There is like a specific thought though, that kind of comes into mind of like, like what you said with the technical aspects of Sean Penn's performance, it's amazing. And I don't know specifically with the disability that he had or the character had, would you have gotten that kind of performance, and would you have gotten the feel that you needed, like in that courtroom scene, for example, when he's getting really upset on the stand? Would you have gotten that with someone with the actual like disability itself? I don't know. And so like it's like a rock and a hard place kind of situation in my head, at least for a director or a writer or both, I guess, that Jesse Nelson did both. But that would be a hard, I mean, and obviously the time is different. It's 2002, so maybe types of discussions really aren't being had. But by today's, like the conversation around it today, I wonder if it would be any different, if it would be a lot harder for her to make that decision. I don't know. But I don't necessarily fault, I wouldn't fault them for making that decision, because it's a rock and a hard place.
I don't think it's sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's a rock and a hard place, so it's just like I don't want, like, she's going for a specific vision of what's going to happen in that film, and it would be so hard to think about like, well, I guess you can get the best candidate, you know, and maybe it works out perfectly well, but yeah, I don't know, you go for it.
Yeah. I don't think it's about judging them, you know, like saying, oh, they shouldn't have done this just because like it's 2002. There was like, it's just a different world back then. But I think like it's important to acknowledge it. And this happened with the Sia movie that she directed or produced or wrote or whatever, where the actress dances in it, and she's a professional dancer, the actress. And so people said the same thing. They're like, oh, well, you couldn't, you know, hire someone with autism because they wouldn't be able to like do these kinds of like intricate dance moves and all this different stuff. And then other people made the argument like, if you are portraying a character that couldn't do these things in real life, then maybe it's not a story to be told, or maybe try to tell it in a different way or something. And so I understand the whole like, oh, would you get the same performance if you used somebody who really was on the autism spectrum? But I think that the response to that of being, well, should you be portraying somebody, like, is that your story to tell if the person who actually has that disability wouldn't be able to, you know, perform that way? And so I get it. I'm not saying like one way or the other. I just think it's like a very nuanced, complicated discussion to be had, but I would say like for the most part it's always probably better to like cast people who actually have the disability that your character has. But anyway,
that's so interesting. I don't know. That's a tougher question, because I could see what people are saying. Maybe it's a story that shouldn't be told, but then at the same time I'm like, but it's not about it's about getting the performance, and if the person's incapable, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's where
so much to think
about. Because it's like, I think it's like you can tell the story still, but tell it in a different way, or tell it in a way that accommodates for the disability that you're telling a story about. You know, like, I think that there's this point of like, is it about producing a good film, or is it about being truly representative of the community or the person that you're telling the story about?
Right.
So, I mean, there's just like a lot of layers and intricacies to it. I don't think that there's necessarily one right answer that fits in every single scenario, but this is why it's important in films and everyday life that you are like consulting with the people who you're representing or telling a story about or whatever. But
yeah, that's a good point.
That's
a good point. I think I'm right there with you, in a lot of different ways at least, but I think maybe when it comes down to like a fictional story, to me that makes more sense of like, well, maybe it's not a story that should be told. But when it comes down to this movie, if it's based off of a true story, it's like, well, this is the story, and I don't want to manipulate.
Yeah.
I don't want to change the story.
Well, it's inspired by a true story. I don't think it's based on.
Oh, gotcha.
Because if it is, they don't give credit to it at the beginning, which is even more problematic, I would say, that you're taking a real disabled person's story and like making a profit off it and then not even crediting or like drawing attention to the actual person. So I don't know how much they actually drew from the person's life. I just saw that online people say it was inspired by a true story. So.
To me, that probably means that there was some headline in the newspaper that said, like, an intellectually disabled guy got left with his daughter, and that's all. And then they're like, let's make an entire movie about this.
Well, I think that the story that it's based off of is a man who his daughter is taken away from him, and then he goes through the court system to, like, get her back. That's the story, but I don't know how much of it is, you know, beat for beat, the movie, but...
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah, that's a good discussion to have. I, at the very least, you know, if it doesn't go in one way or another, just having the discussion and just by itself is good enough. Or maybe not necessarily just good enough, but it's a good start at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sweet, cool. I don't know. Yeah. What are you smiling
at? What did you think of this movie?
Oh, it's great. Overall, it's great. Dude, I love, there's just so many, it's just like so sweet. Like Sam is so sweet, you know?
For sure.
And like, as far as I could tell, I mean, there's a few mistakes that he makes, like for, you know, for his kid, for Lucy. And, but you know, he's just trying to do his best with what he's got. Like when he tells her to run, like after the birthday, he's like, run, run. Or like, dude, do you know what I'm talking about? And she's in the photo booth and the cops are trying to get her.
And then
he's like yelling at her to run. I'm like, dude, she's going to be lost in whatever city this is. Like, that's obviously he doesn't know. He's just trying to protect her. All he could think about right there. But obviously, like, that's a really bad, that's really bad advice. Like, don't run, dude. but, and then the whole birthday thing, he's just trying to make, it's all based off of his love for Lucy, right? And so, like, every decision that he makes is just for that, and what he thinks is going to portray his love for her the best, and or what's going to put that out there the best. And so you just get so many sweet moments. You know, I like how he's just constantly, you know, telling everyone like what a wonderful choice they made with their coffee or with whatever they did.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's just so sweet. And anytime there's a character that is like putting that down in any way, you're just like, screw you. I don't like you. Like Laura Dern's character for a little while. I'm just like, man, you suck. I know that, you know, she just cares about this little girl. So she's trying to like look out for her, but I'm just like, there's just quite a few times where she looks at Sam like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah, like,
what, why would you do that? I'm just like, dude, like, what do you mean? Like, he's just there for his daughter, and he doesn't have really the concept together of like, You know, he needs to like give it space or something like that. I don't know. But so it's like just really annoys me when she's kind of like annoyed. I'm like, what do you have to be annoyed about, dude? Like, number one, this girl wasn't even in your life. I mean, I guess I don't really know the timeline of all this. I don't know how long she was living with them. They don't really do a good job, I don't think, at showing that. Maybe they do. But I don't know. Her character annoys me a little bit. And then every once in a while when there's like the coffee guy in Starbucks who's getting annoyed with his order taking too long, I'm like, well, just take a look, dude. Like,
and he's like about to hand it to him too.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he's like, oh, forget this. I'm like, your order's right there, bro. Yeah. Chill out.
So there's just a few characters where I'm like, screw you, screw you, screw you.
Yeah.
And then, because, you know, it's just so sweet.
We don't have to go in depth into this conversation, but this movie also like brings up a lot of feelings about adoption for me because there's a lot of, so my wife and I were looking at, we've like sort of looked at adoption off and on, like not too seriously, but like considering like, okay, when we start having kids, do we want to adopt, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did like a really deep dive into like adoption, what it consists of. And there are some, like adoption influencers kind of who they were adopted and then they share their experience about being adopted. And a lot of them talk about how adoption isn't ethical in the United States, at least. Huh. And one of the things they talk about is like, in a lot of systems, not all like organizations that do adoption, but a lot of times it's really exploitative to the birth parent or parents because, and you kind of see this with Laura Dern's character where it's like Laura Dern and her husband are seen as like a quote unquote more stable environment for Lucy.
Sure.
But we also see from Lucy's perspective, like the psychological harm that is being caused by being separated from her birth father, who very clearly loves her.
Right.
And there's this notion throughout where Laura Dern is like, oh, it's about Lucy, like we need to give Lucy the best life, but it's like you're doing harm to Lucy by separating her from her father and then like enforcing this like separation between them. So you're doing harm that's not in Lucy's best interest. And then it's like, I mean, so a lot of adoption influencers talk about how, like, they mention this in the movie, too, like, reunification is the goal, but they talk about how, like, if adoption was really an ethical process, you wouldn't have so much of a focus on adoption, but on giving the parents the support structure that they need to be a parent, you know? And you see that in the movie, too, where, like, and I don't know how reflective this is of real life, but like Sam goes to court and there's no one there to help him understand what's going on. He gets pulled, he gets arrested by the police and there's no one there to explain to him like what's going on. You have all of these adults who are treating him as if he has the brain capacity of an adult when we learn that he has the mental capacity of a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And like the system itself does nothing to make sure that he's understanding his rights, that he's being protected as the father and stuff. And again, I don't know how reflective this is, that is of real life, but I would argue that like the best thing for Lucy isn't that she's stripped away from her father and given visitation every now and then. It's that the courts or the system would step in and say, Sam loves Lucy. He wants to have Lucy, but he needs additional supports to make sure that she's getting the help that she needs to grow and be healthy. So like that to me is the solution in this situation. Is like, it's not adoption, even though that's what Laura Dern and the courts are saying, is that adoption is the best option. It's really getting Sam the support that he needs to give Lucy a stable environment.
No, 100%. I totally agree with you. Because kind of going back to when we were talking about like all the different disabilities and stuff like that, and getting representation, or representatives, I guess, for like acting purposes for the film. Like, why would that not be carried out? If someone was deaf, right, you would get, like, a sign, what do you call it, like a sign?
Yeah, you would get an ASL interpreter.
Yeah, interpreter. Yeah, there you go. You would get an ASL interpreter into the courtroom to make sure that the person who's deaf or whatever, like, totally understands everything that's going on. So why wouldn't you do that for, you know, have, like, a kind of a professional who can explain things in simpler terms or whatever so that Sam can understand it. Or at least someone who, because Sam really makes connections through like the Beatles and, you know, he has to like make this whole intricate like connection yeah. in order to really understand certain things. And you see it throughout the film too, where he explains things through like some kind of Beatle metaphor or whatever, or like some fact that he remembers and everyone else in the room is just like, okay, like you have no idea what you're talking about because you're talking about the Beatles all of a sudden. But, and I didn't take a lot of time to really sit there and think of like what he was actually trying to say with that, you know, but you could tell like, I bet if you do sit there, and this is just speculation, but if you do sit there and try to like, interpret what he's saying in Beatles terms, he does actually understand what's going on when he does.
He's making a point for sure.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, okay, I get it. And there is one point in the courtroom where Michelle Pfeiffer kind of smiles. And I guess I'm having a hard... Maybe I'm kind of on the fence if she's just smiling like, okay. Or if she's smiling like, he gets it. Or like, he just explained
she
it.
Gets what he's trying to say.
Yeah exactly.
I think it's when he's talking about either... Here Comes the Sun, and everyone was told, the writer was told, like, you can't make good music, and then it's one of the best songs. And I think he was trying to say, like, here's this person who was told over and over again, like, you can't be a good songwriter, and then he did it, and he was a really good songwriter. And for him, he's saying, like, people keep telling me I can't be a good dad, but let me be a dad, and I'll show you that I can be a good dad.
Yeah, there you go.
He doesn't make those connections, but in his mind, it's making sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's everyone else that can't make those connections, apparently.
Yeah, they don't meet him where he's at, right?
Yeah,
They expect him to meet them where they're at, but, and I mean, a cynical person would say the system is set up that way because the, like, wealthier, well-off family, Laura Dern and her husband, they want a child, and so they're going to... A system is going to be built around them being able to have a child and the more vulnerable person having their child taken away. But that's what a cynical person would say.
Well, there's
sorry, I have to go get my charger really quick.
No.
My computer's going to die.
Okay, fine.
Just talk into the void.
I am talking into the void. No one's listening except for the listener. Hey, everybody. We're here. We're talking about I Am Sam. All in lowercase, by the way. At least in the title of the film, or like in the little title sequence of the film. Why? I don't know. Let's look it up together, shall we? Why is the title of I Am Sam in all lowercase? Let's look it up. The title of the movie I Am Sam is written in lowercase letters as a design decision by the book's designer. It is a book. It is a book. Lowercase letters are easier on the eyes than all caps, and some say that the first line of text in a book is meant to lead the reader into the text, and the first row of letters doesn't need to be indented. I don't know what that had to... That was AI explaining why I Am Sam is in all lowercase in the title sequence.
Perfect.
Perfect. I don't... Yeah, I was just... That was a question that I was going to ask, like, why do you think I Am Sam is written in lowercase? At least in the movie specifically, not if you're looking it up on Google or whatever. Apparently, it's just easier on the eyes, and that's the only reason why they did it, according to AI. All right. Welcome back, Big T.
Thank you.
I did want to say also on the same subject, to Sam's credit, he does realize... or understand from early on that he needs like a mom or like a motherly figure or whatever for Lucy. And you see that with like the whole, who was it? Was she selling drugs? Like in the food court or whatever, like it looked like maybe the food court of a mall or something like that.
And, she was a sex worker.
Oh, she was a sex worker. Okay. Okay. I don't know. Maybe I just like read into it too literally. Like, I swear the cop was just like, I've told you not to push in here or something like that. So to me, that's pushing drugs or something like that. You know what I mean? But
I guess
maybe that's used on a broader sense.
I think he literally says it too, the cop.
What?
He's in the station. He's like, this is the first time I actually believe someone when they say that they didn't know.
Oh,
she was
that's right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. So, okay. But I love how she's just like paying attention to him. And so he's like, oh, you'd be a perfect mom.
Yeah.
But he understands, like, I need support. And he does have that. And I think that's what I was, that's part of like what I was talking about earlier, like with my initial thoughts of the film. It's like, it's just so sweet and, or not what I was talking about, but I was going to lead into it. Like, just, he's got like this awesome community, and a lot of them have disabilities. Everyone actually has disabilities, like even Annie in her own way.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's ever confirmed.
Like, she has agoraphobia.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's what I figured. I wasn't entirely sure, but he does have like an amazing little community, and he has yeah. even with agoraphobia,
Annie,
she intellectually, she's, you know, all there or whatever, so she could provide like all the specific knowledge that he needs in order to take care of this child. And so like, it was going to work out. There was just like the one slip up, like someone needed to teach him, you can't just put your hands on like someone else's kid or whatever. Like, that's all. Like, if someone just explained that to him, everything probably would have kept going in a nice fashion. And he was also able to recognize, like, hey, like, I know that you're smarter than me, but you need to learn. Like, you need to learn. You can't hold yourself back because of me. It makes me happy when you're learning, when you're reading. It makes me happy when you read, you know? So, like, he understands, like, what she needs. It's just he can't necessarily provide the teaching experiences in order for her to get what she needs. But she's going to need to rely on everyone else around her, teachers, mentors, whatever, in order to get that. And I think
all you need is love.
All you need is love. But he's able to provide. I love that she's like, you're not like other daddies, you know, and he's kind of getting down on himself with what she's saying. And then she's like, but other daddies don't go to the park and play with their kid. And and so it's just like, yeah, that's right. And so it's like he does provide something that all these other parents don't provide a lot of times. And that's very
like
valuable.
he really like just loves spending time with Lucy.
Yeah, exactly, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Almost to a fault, cuz it was like her first day of school and he's like keeping her up because he wants to keep reading I Am Sam.
yeah.
But that's, it all comes from a place of love. And the fact that everyone...
He's just obsessed with her.
The fact that everyone was just looking for the problem, you know? They were just looking for a problem instead of thinking of a solution. They're all using...
Well, their solution was adoption, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's the only solution. There's a saying, I think, like... If you're a hammer, everything's a nail or something like that. And so everyone was just looking for that. This is the only possible outcome because he can't take care of her. Instead of like, how do we figure, like you were saying, how do we figure out how he can get what she needs so that she can have the life, so she can have the love and everything else, you know, in between.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I also wanted to say, like, I love the scene with everyone when they're like going shoe shopping and they all get the balloon and they're walking across the crosswalk with their balloons. It's such an amazing. I love that shot. I love that moment. It's so happy.
Yeah, I love it. Cool.
And there's stuff like that all the time. I love they have those kind of, I don't know what kind of shot it's called, but like they have those just kind of far back shots, like perfectly. What is it? Like just on a plane, I guess. And you know, you have like this kind of straight walking, like they have going across the crosswalk, she's walking across 7-Eleven, you know, like going to him. And I don't know, it's just like this. I wonder if they were trying to say anything with that specific shot.
Well, I think it's callbacks to the Beatles, right?
Oh,
because they have that album.
You're right.
Yeah,
that's true. Dude, you know what? All this, because I haven't seen this since I was a kid. I think there's a John Mayer song. I can't, you know, like Mothers Be Good to Your Daughters, you know, that song? Yeah. 100%. All these years. That must have been popular at the same time as this movie coming out. And so I always thought that that song was in that movie.
That's so
And
funny.
I was looking for it the whole time. And I'm just like, where
is it? That was me looking for
it?
The Laura Dern love interest.
Yeah.
I'm like, where is this?
Where is it? And
I could have sworn this was in here.
Dude, I also 100% thought that the movie ended with the like him throwing the bird, like origami bird, down and her picking it up. I 100% thought that that's where the movie ended all these years. And so when it kept, I like so pressed funny. Pause because I thought it was going to end or something. And I'm like, 30 minutes, like, or whatever. Like, what else is there? I thought that that was it. Like, I, or maybe I need to go to the bathroom. So but I was so surprised. I was just like, no, this is the end, right? What the?
So love crazy. That you and I were just so off about so many things.
Hey, I haven't seen this since I was like 9 or whatever.
I don't think I've seen it since I was a little kid, too.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Like,
oh, it's, like, I was just your wife like, that watched it a lot? I thought you watched
it. She watched it as a kid a lot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
She watched it as a kid, like 6, 7, probably even younger than that. She watched it a lot.
But oh, okay. So I misunderstood what you
I've never watched it with her before. This is my first time watching with her. Yeah, I was watching it, and then she kind of ended up migrating to the room.
Oh, gotcha. What did, did it hold up for her as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same discussion we talked about. Like,
okay. Oh, no.
She said that when she was younger, her mom was like, oh, yeah, Sean Penn doesn't, you know, have a disability. And she was like, what? Yeah, he does, you know. Because, she's like, he acts so well in this. Yeah. So when she was younger, yeah, that's what she was told, and she didn't, like, believe it, because that's the only thing she'd seen him in.
And that's the way that it is as a kid, like, it's you 100% believe something because you see it.
yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
What did you think about the purpose of, like, the blue filter?
Is the blue filter throughout the entire film?
No.
No, it's not. Can you give me examples of when you really
see it? Target. The first time I think you really see it is they're in Target when he's shopping for for diapers. It happens in the courtroom quite a bit. It happens in the foster place where they meet up for every 2 hours. It happens in the police station.
Okay.
Or the hospital, I think, when it's like 3 a.m. I don't know where they are. It looks like a hospital.
With those specific scenes, then, it really seems like it would probably be a depiction of, like, maybe him being overwhelmed or sad or whatever. Like, maybe trying to give off a sense of those feelings and really get the audience to recognize that pattern. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's definitely, like, it's trying to convey the sense of, like, being overwhelmed or whatever.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on why they chose, like, a blue filter.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. You'd think that they would choose maybe a different color because blue's more supposed to be, like, calming and whatever, mm-hmm. but not so calm. Maybe that's an interesting statement itself. It's, like, the exact opposite of calm.
Like, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I could think of is, like, it sort of mutes everything. It kind of, like, turns all the other colors down, so the world doesn't seem as, like, bright. So I don't know if it's that or if it's just, like, they had really bad color mixing in 2002 and they just didn't know what they were doing.
I don't think so. I think it was definitely maybe not, like, a specific feeling or an emotion, but I think it was to depict more of, like,
yeah, it served a purpose for sure.
Yeah, things are not looking so good.
Yeah.
In whatever moment. It was. I did notice the blue, but I should have taken notes on, like, or really made a mental note of, like, when it was actually popping up. Oh, you know what? I want to look this up. Did Sean Penn mean to fall with the cake in I Am Sam? I don't know. Maybe I could have sworn.
Yeah, he did. He put in all that work.
Yeah, I know.
At the very end.
I could have sworn that maybe I saw a TikTok of, like, did you know in this film?
Yeah,
blah,
yeah,
blah, blah. And
AI thing.
I'm pretty sure that he actually slipped and didn't mean to fall. He wasn't supposed to fall.
Because he crushed that cake.
Big time. But but they played it off.
Everywhere.
They played it off, though, which was great. I love that. You know, if that's true, if that's actually a true thing or whatever, he didn't mean to slip.
But I don't know if it would be, because do you think they'd have a real cake that he's running with, or would it just be a prop that looks like a real cake?
Well, maybe it would have been cheaper to just do a real cake. I don't know. It was like a Target cake or Walmart cake or something, right? I don't remember.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't. Wait a second.
Did you notice that there was a lot of montages in this movie? There's like four montages.
I mean, yeah, kind of or whatever. I think just to get like the passing of time and just kind of show their relationship or what's going on over the...
Yeah, what? I just was like, this is like the fourth montage in this movie.
They also had a lot of like freeze frames a lot of times. Yeah, they did. Which is interesting. Yeah. I usually don't like freeze frames, but after a while, after like the second or third one, I was like, you know what? I think this fits.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm just like an apologist or whatever. Maybe all these things, I'm just like, no, it works. It works. I don't know.
That's funny.
But
I will die defending this movie.
I think, you know what? Like, I think this movie has like a 7.6 out of 10 or something on IMDb, which seems pretty accurate, I would say.
That seems accurate.
And
a little high for me.
Well, see, that's the thing. For me, like, overall, it's probably a little high, but at the same time, there's like just the one. Just the courtroom scene when he has the realization or whatever that she needs more or something, you know, and he starts getting emotional at the end because the lawyer did his job and got him to that point. And that scene's just so good. And you know what, dude? I really don't cry like in movies and stuff. That made me cry, man. Like I legitimately cried. And I don't know if it's because I'm a parent. I have no idea. I'm not a crappy parent, so I know I'm never going to like lose my kids like he could possibly. So I don't necessarily relate on that level.
Well, he's not even a crappy parent either.
Well, sure. Okay, through no fault of his own, he's facing the possibility of losing his kid. But that, like in my reality, that would be...
Yeah,
that wouldn't really help. That would be like the reason why I would lose my kids if I have a piece of junk, right? But if I was a piece of junk, maybe I wouldn't care so much. But I'm not a piece of junk, so like it really makes me sad, the idea of losing my kids. And really the only way that I would relate is like if I got ill or something and then I died and then that's how I lost my kids. Or if my kids died in a car crash or something, like that's like just the thought of losing my kids in general, I think is how like why it was touching me so much, because it was just so sad, man.
And what's really annoying too about that scene is the lawyer is like, I think he asks two main questions. Mm. He's like, does Lucy deserve like a better life or like everything? And I think every parent would say, yes, my child deserves the world. And then he's like, can you provide everything for her? And I think most parents that are self-aware would say, no, I can't provide her with everything.
Right. Yeah.
Like I can provide her with a lot of stuff, but it's like Sam is honest in a way that a lot of parents probably would be too if they were asked those questions, maybe not on the stand, but he's being punished for being honest and being like any other parent, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
And Rita kind of talks about that too. She's like, what parent hasn't felt like they've made a mistake?
Yeah, right. And she tries her best or whatever to speak for him in that way, because I think if he had the capability, he would have tried to spin it, you know? In his favor, I guess, because he just couldn't get there because he was so focused on that part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he couldn't really try to turn it into a positive later. Kind of after.
Go ahead. No, go.
Well, I was just gonna say after saying that, like, what is the main message that they're trying to say with this movie, you think?
Well, I think it's like the Beatles, right? All you need is love. I mean, I think there's a lot of different messages, right? But their whole thing is like, oh, it doesn't matter who you are as long as you love your child. Like,
right.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, because I think specifically after that court scene and it seems like all is lost or whatever and she's going to go to the foster care system and he's kind of alone. There's just a specific part where he's alone in his apartment. And then it's on the opposite end, you have, it goes immediately, it cuts from him alone in his apartment after he kind of lost in a way, and then, or has this moment of defeat, and then it cuts to Rita being able to snuggle in with her kid that she's basically neglected, like, probably his whole life. You know what I mean? And so it's like...
No, she hasn't neglected him. She's yelled at him.
Oh, yeah, great.
But she doesn't just ignore him. She also yells.
Yeah, she does yell. That's great. And she gets some scooters. But
that she yells at him for using.
But it's so not fair, you know? And I think she realizes, I mean, that's the moment where she realizes
the whole point, right?
she hasn't been taking advantage of this great gift that she has. And I relate to that on a certain level because of like depression and feeling overwhelmed with life in general. Sometimes I'm not there for my kids as much as I'd like to. I have some moments throughout the day where I do a good job playing with them or whatever, but for the most part, I'm just like trying to stay above water, like keep my head above water here, which is so hard at a lot of different periods. And I, you know, just like her, like I wish I could be better. I feel like I'm failing or whatever. And then there's days where I'm like, I'm on top of it and things are going great, you know?
Which I think is normal.
Which is totally normal. And so that's why it's like so screwed up that he has to fight. He has to fight so hard for this with these people. And yet, like, Lucy has a way better childhood, I think, in most ways. As far as what I saw from the film, in most ways, compared to all these other kids who are just getting neglected. You have like this dad with what's his face, I don't remember, from her school, who basically did his whole project for him or whatever, and is getting mad at him for not knowing everything. It's like, well, you didn't teach him anything.
Yeah,
you just
wanted to do pill bugs or potato bugs or whatever.
Yeah, right. Like, you chose everything for him, and you probably told him to go watch a show while you do this part or whatever, so he doesn't mess it up. And that's why he doesn't know anything. He's not getting any time with his dad or something like that. I don't know. And then you have Rhea, who's not there for her kid at all, taking care of himself. Like, they don't even have a nanny, it seems like, to maybe help out. Like, they're not giving their kid what he needs. I don't know. It's just like totally messed up to me.
Yeah, that's definitely a takeaway, I think, is that like you can be failing your kids. Like, there's more than one way to fail your kids, and there's more than one way to be a good parent, but it really comes down to like spending time with your kid, loving them, seeing them as like an actual human being who deserves love and needs and attention and stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
For sure.
And Sam understands it more than most, you know? Like all these other parents, they seem to like look inwards and like, oh, I'm failing, and that's all they're focusing on, whereas Sam's just like, oh, okay, it's time to play, or like he's proactive, whereas all the other parents seem to be more reactive, I guess, but they're not even doing anything about it a lot of the times. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think it's a good point.
Yeah, that was like my main thing. Yeah. And I think it's just like it's just elaborating more on what you said. All you need is love. Like, that's really the focus. You need to love your kid and you need to spend time with them. Otherwise, what are you doing? Why are you even a parent? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, why even...
Your kid should get taken away.
And he didn't even choose it.
Give him to Sam.
He didn't even know. He probably didn't even know that she was going to get pregnant, the lady that he slept with or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
He probably didn't know that was going to happen. So he wasn't looking to be a dad, I don't think. Or maybe he didn't know he was going to be a dad, and he just rose to the occasion for so long. It's amazing.
That's true. He's a great dad.
He's a great dad. And it's really cool thinking about the idea that like Lucy has, because she's exposed around that, like just in its entirety, like just everyone that she knows, like in her family base, in her community family. I don't know. You know what I mean? Or in her makeshift family that she grows to love and appreciate and isn't like one of those like adults that's like judging these people for their disabilities, and she's like embracing it instead. And so cool. I love the idea that she's just gonna grow up and like she knows. Although like as a kid, you know, some other kids are making fun of the situation and show she's trying to distance herself, but that's like a natural thing for a kid to do.
Yeah, I think that's understandable.
Yeah, it's totally understandable. But for the most part, especially as she gets older, like she's gonna have like this great love for people with disabilities and just be there for them, which is great.
Yeah,
I think it's neat.
And her dad really accepts her for her, right? He doesn't try to fix her, doesn't try to change her, doesn't try to make her be a certain way. He just loves her for her. And I think you don't see that with the other parents, right? Like the dad from school, he's like, you know this. You know, he's trying to make his son look smarter than he may be. And then with Rita, like, she's trying to make him stick to, like, a very specific schedule and, like, do all this stuff that he doesn't really want to do, you know?
Yeah. No, totally.
I
agree. And by the end of the film, it's just funny. We got like this 2 hour or a little over 2 hour film. And really the only thing, besides all the hardship that was going on in between, the only thing that happened, and it's such a beautiful outcome, is that Sam just increased his community of helpers. That's it.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
He's got his regular group of friends. He's still got Annie somewhere, I'm sure. And now he's got Rita and Billy, I think is her son's name. And
Willie.
Oh, Willie. Yeah, Willie.
Yeah, because I was like, she should have her child taken away just for naming him Willie.
What? What? Jeez, all right. Judgmental. I'm just kidding. And then you have like
these... I mean, I think too, like,
yeah,
part of the movie is like Sam didn't change. It was the people around him that needed to. It was Laura Dern and her husband. It was Rita, which I think that you could say that there is some like problematic stuff about like people, like non-disabled people, like taking inspiration in people with disabilities doing like normal activities. It's like inspiration porn kind of type stuff, you know? And it's like, oh, look, like the non-disabled people actually learned from the person with disabilities, where it's like, okay, that's like a little like infantilizing, like sort of, but again, it's 2002.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, in the context of 2002, I don't think people are really having these types of discussions back then.
It's a little tropey, you know, to be like, we actually learned. Yeah, exactly. By today's standards. Yeah, sure. But again, yeah, it's 2002. So, but yeah, he gets at least three more people in his corner. Four more people,
four.
I guess, with Willie. Yeah.
With Willie and... Oh, man. Yeah, that scene with Willie and him, like watching that show, and they're both talking about it. He's like, "Oh, I have someone to relate to."
Yeah,
for once, I'm not just alone drinking my Kool-Aid or whatever it was that he was drinking.
Why be my dirty hands all over the couch?
Oh yeah, that was a statement for sure. He's like, "Screw you! I don't care about your couch, Mom. You're not even my mom. You're not here." I wanted to ask you a question about the part where Lucy's with the foster parents with Laura Dern's character, whatever her name is, something. But, and then they're like outside. I don't think it was the first day. It was at some point or whatever, like early on when she's living with them, and they start painting. And the painting that Lucy comes up with, do you think, I think you said your wife actually kind of like deals with like kind of art or whatever, or like maybe expression or something for like therapy and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, she's an art therapist, yeah.
Art therapist, yeah, dude, I don't know the terms. Hey, listen, I didn't even know that was a thing. What did she have any comments on that painting by chance? I'm curious.
No.
Oh, really?
It's a little hard to do it for paintings in movies because they're not real paintings, but she jokingly was like, the scene starts where Lucy is painting and she's like, that's trauma.
Oh, really?
But she was just like being silly. Yeah,
that's
funny. But it's too hard to do with like fake art, you know? It's not really representative.
Sure. Well, I mean, I feel like they were probably trying to say something with her painting, maybe.
But it would be more of like a narrative analysis, not really an art therapy analysis.
Gotcha. Well, to me, what the painting meant, because it seemed like a neighborhood of houses, but with like mushrooms, and it just seemed like weird looking, you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure there were like doors on each like mushroom or something like that. And to me, what that would say, at least for maybe narrative purposes, was just like, she's in this new place, but it's kind of fantastical, almost like alien-like. So she feels like out of place, right? But at the same time, it is like cool, you know what I mean? Like it's interesting, right? It's like, it's not necessarily like every house looked like a haunted house and it was scary or whatever. There were mushrooms, right? So they were like, they were, you know, it's more of an upbeat attitude towards it. Like, I feel out of place and it's weird. But at the same time, there's like all these, you know, new discoveries to be made potentially. I don't know. In my head, that's what they were maybe trying to say with that painting.
Yeah, maybe.
Darn, that would have been interesting to see if like she had an actual analysis on what the painting was.
No. It's like in Parasite when she says she's an art therapist and she's like the schizophrenic zone.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Bottom right corner or whatever. It's like, this isn't real.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's hilarious. Oh, man, I totally forgot about that. Dude, I love that movie. That's such a good movie. I should watch it. Oh, never mind. We already talked about that. I had a note. I have these deep thoughts and questions or whatever. Do you have anything ready to go?
I don't have anything deep. I just have some funny moments or like commentary.
Okay, yeah, sure. Hit me with one.
One, I think that it should be illegal to have a bouncy house in your apartment if you don't live on the first floor.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah, I could see that.
Like the way I was like, this man has a full ass bouncy house in his apartment. And I'm pretty sure when Lucy opens the door, you can see that they're at least on the second floor.
Yeah, I think so.
Could you imagine being the neighbors below?
Coming upstairs, like, that's what
the she's coming hell upstairs. Is this?
Yeah, dude, I'd be so annoyed. Although at the same time, is it ever really mentioned if that whole apartment complex is for people with disabilities? Because it seems...
No, it's not.
It's not. It's just an apartment. Okay.
Yeah.
I would hope that, you know, Sam's probably been there the entire time and the people down below would just kind of understand.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And also... Is it even like regulation to have a bouncy house inside of a small? I'm just thinking
in 2002,
like,
maybe.
I'm just thinking like in the apartments that I used to live in.
Yeah.
That bouncy house would be like 6 feet tall. You wouldn't even be able to bounce in it, really. Like,
well, okay. I'm sure there's rental bouncy houses that are smaller than.
Like, however. It's just. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I also love this scene. It's not a scene. It sort of happens a lot. But, like, Rita is so cutthroat. She, like, brings up people's personal lives. Like,
yeah.
Did you feel like the failure of a parent when your son OD'd? I was like, damn, Rita, calm down.
Yeah, I bet if a
like,
lawyer...
She went for the jugular.
If, like, a real lawyer, like, was analyzing that all of the court case, they would probably have a lot of things to say, like, you couldn't
get
away
like
with
this,
that.
I don't think you can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think so.
But
either.
She does it again. She does it to the other lawyer too. I don't remember what she says. But I'm like, wow, she like really dug up dirt on all these people.
Yeah. This, what the?
This is very like ad hominem over here,
dude. Yeah. That was a thought that I had during like the whole trial and all that stuff. Like, I was. Like, I love, like, court scenes and all that stuff and lawyers just doing their thing. I think a lot of people do, right? And, like, especially, I think maybe that, like, kind of love grew probably from, like, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with, like, Uncle Phil and every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And rest in peace, The Cosby Show. Can't enjoy that show anymore. But, which is so sad to me. That still makes me so sad that I can't watch that. I mean, well, I can't personally watch it. I can't watch it. But the Claire Huxtable in that, she's also a lawyer and every once in a while. So in both of those shows, every once in a while, you get like scenes of them doing their thing. You're like, yeah, yeah. Like as a kid, I loved that. And for a long time, I wanted to be a lawyer because of it. But then also
Suits.
I've seen a little bit of Suits and I've seen a little bit of like How to Get Away with Murder. That show...
You were going to say Murder, She Wrote, weren't you?
Almost. I knew that was wrong immediately, though. And I'm like, that's not right. Although that show gets away from the lawyer type of stuff like really quick, which is annoying. But...
Yeah.
But also, what is it? Oh, To Kill a Mockingbird, like that whole thing. Mm. Oh, man, yeah. Dude. What a beautiful... But so anyway, you have that and they're like beautiful and I feel like they're really well constructed, like a well-constructed like murder mystery, you know, like you really have to think everything out with those type of scenes and stuff. But with this, like it definitely doesn't seem super well thought out. It just seems really emotionally driven most
yes,
of the time.
It feels like an actor and a movie writer portraying a court scene without doing any real research into what a court looks like.
But I still, at least in the beginning, I loved it anyway, because you had Sam's friends over there with their signs, and he's just like, you guys did a wonderful job on those signs. Thank you for doing that. It's just so, even in this, what's supposed to be so serious, and it does get serious later on, it's like this lighthearted moment that you have, and it's so awesome. And then he goes... Who is it? Oh, yeah. They have, like, the other, like, witness or whatever on the stand who's talking about her experience growing up as, like, an 8-year-old or 10-year-old or something like that with her parent with a disability. And he goes over there and gives her, like, a hug. It's like, oh, I think you turned out to be a wonderful person or something. Like, So it made me, like, love the scene anyway, like, despite the fact that it was poorly like executed overall. It's still great though.
That's true. The other scene that I thought was really funny was when Rita and Sam are in the diner and they're like talking, and then all this, they're having like a really serious conversation, and then the camera like zooms out and everyone's in the booth with them.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah.
That was funny. That was so funny.
Yeah. You see, dude, that's funny. That almost feels like the first time that that had ever happened, like in a, because people use that joke a lot now, you know?
Yeah. Well, they did a good job though on it too, because a lot of times when that happens, like you can tell that they're going to lead up to it, because like you don't really see the two people in the same scene or like whatever, but it was really well done. I was laughing when they zoomed out. Like there's like 8 people in the booth.
Yeah, dude. Oh, you know what? There's a part that I really loved going back to the birthday, the surprise party scene. And I think when the social worker, this is like when the social worker is the one that knocks on the door, and Sam's like, oh, Annie was supposed to call and warn us or something like that. And it's, he tells his friend to like get the lights, but it's like daytime and all the windows are open. So like, what's that going to do? I don't know. I just thought it was such a funny little joke to put in there that, like if you're really not paid attention and you're not in that moment watching that, you could totally miss it. But I saw it. I was like, that's so hilarious.
No, it's true.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I did have, I've been trying to find it. What is it? Oh yeah. So there's a spot in the movie at like after the whole defeat or whatever, and then Sam's like super depressed and like basically quits his job, and he just builds all those, that origami wall of despair. And Rita goes in there. Dude, she kicks down the door, which was awesome. She's like, screw this, you know? Like, she's like, I'm not going to... Like, I fought too hard, and I've basically ruined my practice for this. Like, I'm knocking over this door right now. Although, I don't know why that would have really ruined her practice. But anyway, she goes in there, and she's trying to talk to him and all that stuff. But specifically, I think Sam says something like there's really no room here. And I was just like, oh man, like it kind of made me pause for a second. I'm like, what are they trying to say with that specifically? Like he builds this tiny little room of despair for himself, and there's really no room in here. And kind of the interpretation that I had of that, if there really is an interpretation to be made from it, was like, he's kind of like the despair is like taking over his mind, and he doesn't have any room. Like the room represents his mind and how he's feeling. And or as maybe his heart, I guess, and how it's feeling, and it's just completely filled up with despair, and there's really no room for anyone here right now. I don't know. That was just me maybe reading way too into it, but
no, I think it's true. I think it's like his world has shrunk. You know, he's lost Lucy pretty much, and it's just him, and he's really sort of spiraling.
That's true. Yeah. It's so sad, dude. That whole segment is just so sad to me.
Sad.
And then what do you think about the possibility of like, I mean, we kind of talked about it before, but like the long-term effects, if things didn't go in the way of Sam getting his kid back by the end, the long-term effects of Lucy and how she could potentially like blame herself, because really everything spiraled out of control. Like, I could see her easily blaming herself for running away in the first place and making this, in front of the social worker, making this a thing, and her looking back on it continuously throughout life. Like, I would have had my loving, I mean, not to say that the foster family wouldn't have been, you know, a loving home or whatever, but like I lost my connection with my father, like my deep connection, and being able to be around him at all times, because of one thing that I did, and the potential blame that she would feel, and the guilt, I guess, that she would feel because of that for the rest of her life. Do you think that that's a possibility?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that being forcibly removed from your loving home with your parent, is traumatic on a lot of different levels. And I think that she would be traumatized by feeling like it was her fault.
Yeah.
She would be traumatized by feeling like, you know, psychologically, mentally, emotionally, like all the different things, you know. I think that, and that's kind of the irony of this, is that everyone is saying like, oh, we're doing this for Lucy's benefit. It's for the child. It's for the child. But then every scene you see with Lucy, she's like being negatively impacted by this forced removal. And I think it just goes to show, and again, I don't know if this was the purpose of the, like if the movie did this intentionally, but like how, you know, adoption can very easily become unethical because you're separating a child from a loving parent because the parent doesn't meet X, Y, or Z standard when, you know, you should be just giving the support system that the family needs.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of like the last really like deep thing that I had to think about. Otherwise, yeah, it's just more like funny things or weird observations. Yeah,
I don't have anything else.
Real fast. Do you think... they were definitely doing a Porsche ad when she like slammed on the brakes, Rita. You remember that scene?
Yeah. I thought like this was clearly sponsored by Porsche and Starbucks and Pizza Hut.
And Nike, maybe. There's like a little Nike Shox thing on the side. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's a few ad placements for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it was so fast though, because like it really, it showed in the blink of an eye the Porsche like icon or logo or whatever, like on her car. Yeah. I'm like, oh,
like look how fast we can break.
Wow, it's amazing.
That scene was funny too when she's driving and like cursing everybody out and stuff.
Yeah, dude.
Come on, you idiot.
I made a note. I'm like, she sounds like me. That's kind of, although
maybe you should have been a lawyer.
Yeah, oh yeah, maybe. I guess I would have fit right in if that's the only criteria. You just have to hate other drivers. Dude. Nah, I don't. Never mind. I don't want to get into it. Utah's just the worst. That's all. Utah's the worst. And every day, I get really upset on the road. Anything else that I have to say? I don't know. I'm like trying. I'm quickly scanning through my highlights to see if there's anything that I have to get out there. I don't know. I don't think so. I think we're good.
Cool.
I think it's right at home as a 7.6 out of 10. I think
I think it's a pretty fair assessment.
I think it's a solid movie. I think it has good things to say, maybe a little tropey. Sam has no fear climbing 50 feet up in the air in a tree or whatever that was. That was a huge tree, dude. Maybe not 50 feet.
Also, whoa. That was so weird.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird thing. I don't know. Why would you do that?
Because he's like spying on Lucy, right?
Yeah, basically.
I feel like it's such a weird way to do that. Like, just have him standing around a corner or like behind a car, but you just get this weird shot of like him going full Rambo in a tree.
Fearless. I mean, hey, maybe that's where Lucy gets it from. Like when she like climbs down her little room.
Totally,
and then
forgot
climbs
about
up.
That scene though. It's like,
yeah.
What? Maybe that's where you're going back to, like the music. You know, if you had different music, this would be a different movie. It's like hunting.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it could. I would do it. I feel like that would be mean or whatever. But you could easily, make it a creepier movie with some different music in there. Cool. Well, I think that concludes our discussion on I Am Sam. Overall, good movie, I think. If you have kids, maybe some scenes will hit you harder than others. I don't know. It hit me hard, dude. I really don't cry in movies, man. It made me cry. Although I was like really tired yesterday, and usually I get more emotional when I'm tired. So
that
probably played a role into it. But thanks for the discussion. Now let's get into our last little segment, Fire Partner Critique. Choose some cast member or crew member that you would fire, partner with, or a critique? Almost there, but you'd critique. Big T, who would you fire?
I would fire the set designer in charge of the courtroom.
Yeah.
Because, like, it was weird. They had, like, teddy bears around the back.
That was odd.
Part of the thing.
Kids court.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm just like, I mean, maybe that's very reflective of kids court, but it was like kind of off-putting.
Yeah, I have no idea if that's a thing when it comes to like cases. But I'm like,
this
kids.
Wouldn't be comforting.
Yeah, this is more scary than, again, like scary music in the background.
It was like the stuffed animals were like having a ritual sacrifice of the person inside.
Maybe. Who would I fire? I come up with answers like beforehand, but I did not this time because I thought I had some more time. I was thinking two my time. Who would I fire? Who would I fire? Maybe whoever's idea it was to have him climb up in a tree and throw an origami bird down. That was a weird choice. Who would you partner with?
Dakota Fanning.
Interesting.
Or Michelle Pfeiffer.
Interesting.
I just like Dakota Fanning was like the little girl, you know, that we grew up with. Like,
yeah,
we talked about this last week or last time, but like, I feel like she just played, and whenever you needed like a savant little girl, she was always playing the role. So,
yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I could see that. To me, that one's a little bit harder because she does kind of seem creepy a lot of the times. She's almost there. She'll probably be my
critique
answer.
Who would you partner with?
Partner with? You know what? I'll say Richard Schiff, who plays the other lawyer. He's always consistently that character. He does a really good job playing that just kind of like, just straight.
I don't think I know what else he's in.
Oh, really? He's in West Wing. Have you ever seen that show? Oh, man.
No.
I wonder if you would like it. I don't know. It's like, it's just like a whole political like president.
I'm familiar with it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. That show's actually really good. But he's a pretty big character in that show, and he does a great... in any show that he's in, he plays like the exact same character. You know, really straight-faced and really logical or whatever. And so I think he does a great job in this. He's such a small part, though, but I just know him from so many other things. I would definitely always hire him as that character. I would partner with him for sure. Who would you critique?
I would critique the person that said it was a good idea for Sean Penn to sit in a tree.
Well, so they were almost perfect except for that one decision.
Yes.
I guess that would probably be Jesse Nelson, I'm sure, or whoever her writing partner was. I would say Dakota Fanning for my critique because she does a great job.
Yeah, that's fair.
She does a great job acting as a kid. But yeah, you could tell that she's acting and she's just like, yeah, my one note would be like, just stop acting like a creepy doll or something, whatever. I don't all right, cool. Well, that's it. That's I am Sam. Big T, Sam. It is your turn to choose the next film. What are we covering?
Hey, we are watching. It's 1 month early, but we are going to watch Independence Day.
Yeah, dude, I already own that. Yes. Well, really, dude?
I've actually never seen Independence Day.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know, right?
Wow. I saw the pitch deck that you're making. It's so cheesy. This is such a cheesy movie. How could you not? Just kidding. Dude, this movie... Oh, dude, I don't know, man. I don't know if you're going to love it or hate it. It really depends.
We'll see.
I have a feeling you're going to hate
it. I've definitely seen like clips and stuff from it, but I haven't seen the whole thing. Okay, wait, but...
Oh, man.
Is it going to be like Die Hard where I go in thinking it's supposed to be a serious movie and it's just like batshit?
I think, okay. What I will say, I think there's moments where they're trying to be serious, but it's definitely not holding up anymore. Back in the day, I think it was better because it was just kind of the way that it was. But there's a lot of really corny, cheesy parts that they definitely were trying to play into. So it's like,
gotcha.
I think it's mixed, But just for the sake of like whatever they were trying to go for or not go for the sake of your enjoyment, you should definitely go into it with all the cheese filters, okay. Like the cheese tinted glasses. Just go into it with cheese tinted glasses, dude. Because it's so cheesy. I watched it last year because I was like, you know what? It's July 3rd, which most of the movie takes place over July 3rd. I'm going to watch this on July 3rd. And oh boy, did I remember it differently.
I'm excited to watch it.
It's a fun time, though. It's a really fun time. It's, get your popcorn, get your snacks. Dude, I'm so excited. Independence Day, let's see. IMDb is streaming on Stars. Or you can rent or buy it. I already own it. You know what? I'm curious right now. I'm curious how... Oh, no, I won't be able to see. I was going to... Because I already bought it. It's not going to tell me what the price would be on Apple or anything anymore. I guess you could look it up on Amazon.
I'll look it up for you.
I'm just curious. Because it might be cheap enough that it might just be worth...
You'll buy it again.
Well, no, I'm not going to buy it again, but it could be worth buying.
It's $20 on Apple.
Oh, not a chance, dude. Don't buy it. If it's on sale, if it was like I Am Sam and it was on sale for $5, then I would buy it, but definitely don't buy it for $20. Rent it or get a Stars, whatever, subscription for like a month. Cool, man. Dude, I could see you roasting this movie so hard. Oh, man. Okay. Let's see here. So that'll be coming out June 3rd. Oh, so exactly 1 month earlier than when the movie takes place. Yeah. Very interesting. And when was this released? Was it released July 4th, dude? I don't know. Oh, I got to look this up now. Hold on. Just give me a second. Now I'm all interested. I know I'm like derailing. Independence Day film, 1996. Yeah, dude, it's definitely a 1996 film. oh yeah, it came out July 3rd, 1996. So yeah, exactly like a month before. So close, dude. I'm not gonna freaking lie. I was thinking about choosing this film.
Oh really?
Yeah, but wouldn't that have been crazy?
Hold on. I'm glad I did.
Yeah. There's no way that would have been so awesome. If we covered it for July 3rd and the episode came out July 3rd and the movie came out July 3rd, imagine that, dude. Oh man, Sam would have loved that connection. okay, all right, sweet. Well, look forward to that. That episode's going to come out June 3rd, Independence Day. Get ready for the time of your life if you haven't seen it before. I'm excited for it. PG-13 as well. Look at us. Two PG-13 movies in a row for
Look
once.
At us.
It's usually rated R. Sweet. Well, thanks for listening. Have a great month. And we will catch you next time. Next time. What? Bye-bye.
See ya.